Reward your customers with Referred. You have a D2C business with an app, and you want to grow through referrals. And that's where Referred comes in. Referred installs in minutes and includes all the rewards you could ever need. Customize the rewards to fit your brand and change the look so it fits your interface perfectly. Oh, and it's completely free. Head to tryreferred.com to find out more. That's TRYREFERD.com.
What's the glue that holds the company together? What is the unglue? What's breaking the company apart? And there is just so much information in those two questions, and it guides me in terms of the culture and some of the things that need to be fixed before we can even really spend a lot of time on employee experience and customer experience. Because what ends up happening is it comes out that there's definitely culture issues and there's definitely issues on the leadership team that we need to get resolved before we can even move forward with anything else.
Hello, my name is Lauren D'Souza, and you're listening to Retain, the Customer Retention Podcast. More and more companies are wanting to focus on retaining customers, but what exactly are the powers of customer retention? And how are companies using it to keep their customers coming back for more? That's what we're here to find out. Joining me today is Annette Franz, the multi-award-winning customer experience expert and author. She works with businesses to help them understand their employees and customers, identifies what drives retention, and designs strategies to deliver a better experience for all. Annette, it's a pleasure. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to our conversation. I always look forward to talking about all things customer experience, employee experience. So this is going to be a good one.
I was going to say, you have just got the perfect background for what we're discussing here, because on our podcast, it's all about retention and the multiple different aspects to that. It's not just as simple as retaining a customer. There's so many different things to it.
Absolutely.
So I am very, very excited to hear your thoughts based on all of your experience and your own company. So I'm really excited about that. And I guess to kick things off, why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your experience?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Where to begin? That's the crazy part, right? This year, I've been in this profession now 32 years. So it's been a
incredible.
It's been a long ride. And I always say I started when I was four. So you know, I started my career at J.D. Power & Associates back in the early 90s. And it's just been this interesting evolution of customer experience. You know, we didn't even talk about customer experience back then. We talked about customer satisfaction. We talked about loyalty. And, you know, customer experience as a phrase, as a term, didn't even come about for a good 8 to 10 years after I started my career. So, you know, I spent the last 30 plus years, probably 25, 24 of those years working in the corporate world, right? Both on the client side and on the vendor side. Vendor side, running consulting services organizations, client side on the CX strategy teams at both Mattel and Fidelity, and then a startup here in Orange County. Back in early 2017, I started CX Journey. It was time, you know, I think that I knew that I was ready to go out on my own and work on the kinds of projects that I wanted to work on and the types of engagements and do more speaking and, you know, the books and everything. So that's been my career over the last 30 plus years. You know, and like you said, I focus on customer experience and the employee experience, corporate culture, just making sure that the foundation is in place and, you know, that the business can deliver a great experience for everybody.
Yeah, that is awesome and so interesting. I'm so excited to dive into some of the insights you have, because obviously there's so many years of experience and wisdom here. So I'm really excited about all of that. But I'm really curious to know about how CX Journey came about and what are your mission statements with the company?
Back in 2011, I started my blog, called it CX Journey. And at the time I was like, okay, I've been in this field now for almost 20 years and I've got so much stuff in my head and there's all these people coming into this profession. I want to share what I've learned and what I know. And I started the blog, right? And it was just a great way to get all of those thoughts and ideas down on paper. But then, like I said, you know, I left the corporate world in early 2017, started CX Journey just because I wanted to focus on the types of projects and engagements that I wanted to do, you know, very specific, spend more time speaking and doing those kinds of things. And a lot of it too, educating, just getting the word out about what this thing called customer experience really is. And so it's been a fun ride and I'm doing exactly what I set out to do. And the mission for the business really is to put the customer in customer experience or put the customer in customer experience. You know, just, there's a customer there and we call it customer experience, but so many businesses tend to forget that people are a huge part of that. And I focus on customer experience because in order to do that, you have to take care of your employees, right? You have to make sure the employee experience drives the customer experience without a doubt. And so saying that we're putting the customer into customer experience really also means that we've got to put the employee in employee experience. They've got to have a great experience too. We can't forget about, you know, when we say these words and we give them a lot of lip service, that we actually have to remember that there are people that we're talking about here that we're dealing with.
Yeah. And I think that's extremely important. We spend so much of our lives working. And so when we're passionate about what we do, and that resonates with all the employees at different companies and how it goes, if you actually care about what you're doing and you're involved and you're willing to take a further step, that's going to reflect in the customer experience, the service, the product, all of these things.
Absolutely.
And based on what you said, actually, when we were taking a look and doing our research prior to this episode, one thing that I noticed that really piqued my interest was that on the company LinkedIn, it says specifically that you believe that culture is the foundation of your business and culture transformation is the root of CX strategy success. So it might seem a little obvious, but I'm curious from the deeper insights from your point of view, why is culture so important for customers and employees?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a great question and one that needs to be answered more often, because I think a lot of people look at culture and they think culture is just fluff, right? It's this warm and fuzzy thing that just really doesn't mean anything for anybody, you know? And there truly is a connection between a great culture and great business outcomes, right? That's been proven time and time again. But I think the important thing with culture is that you know what it means. So culture is core values plus behaviors, right? You've got the core values that define and help shape the type of culture that you want. And then you make sure that everybody knows what those behaviors are that are associated with those core values, both the acceptable and unacceptable. And then you get out there and you socialize and operationalize. And the reason that's so important is it really creates alignment across the organization, right? And that's important for both employee experience and for customer experience, right? That alignment means that we're all working in the same direction toward the same goal. It's how we do things around here. It's the values that really drive what we do and how we do those things. If we deliberately design that culture, right, people are at the center of all we do. And I think that one of the conceptions about culture happens when we talk about culture fit, and people start talking about, oh, well, culture fit is, you know, we've got all of these people that look the same, act the same, think the same, do the same, right? And that's not it at all. I mean, it's about, culture fit is about, and it's comical to hear that, right?
Yeah.
It's just, like, no business could ever operate and innovate and thrive and survive if that was the case, right? And so I think that's an important thing to throw out there, is that it really means that we're looking for people who are aligned with our values, that will come into the business and say, okay, if one of your core values is that we're going to treat each other respectfully, or we're going to wow customers, or whatever that core value is. Even in your personal life, you want to align with people whose values are the same or similar to yours, because if you're interacting or have friends or people in your group and your circle whose values don't align with yours, I think it's going to be a challenge to do what's right and know what the right thing is to do at times for one or the other, one or the other of you. So I think that's what the important thing is about culture fit, is that it really is about people who are aligned with the values, especially, but with the mission and the purpose and the goals of the organization. And that creates a culture that we want, right? We get the culture we design, or the one that happens on its own, right? And so to deliberately design that people-centric culture, we really need to bring people on board who care about people, who want to put customers first, who want to respect each other and collaborate and work together in a respectful way, you know? So I think that's important. Sorry, I went way beyond your question.
No, you're all good. That's the beauty of these questions, because it's all about how it kind of unfolds. And I actually grabbed a lot from that, because I was going to ask, I feel like it's easier said than done. Not that it's simple, but it's easier said than done of trying to emulate those values as you go. So I'm curious that either with a client that you've worked with or a brand that you've experienced yourself on the consumer side, have you seen this example really come to life with anyone that you know? And what was like that key thing that made you think, okay, they are very much aligned on the culture between their employees and the way they translate that to customer service?
Yeah, there are a lot of examples. Like every client that I work with, this is where I start, right? The culture, as we said, the culture is the foundation, right? And if we don't have the right foundation, the house is going to crumble, right? So I think that's really important. One great example that I always love to share is a client who was having issues with, and we needed to add core value, to their core values, was a client who was having issues with their frontline, both their sales and their service folks, interacting with customers in a way that was just, it was not what the CEO had envisioned at all, right? They were headbutting, they were antagonistic. It wasn't a good scene. And so we went and looked at all of the different core values that they have. And we ended up adding a core value for customer trust, because that was an issue. The issue was that they didn't respect their customers, and they felt like customers were constantly coming back and saying, we want this, or we don't want to pay for that, or, you know, just we're going to return this, or, you know, and it was just sort of that antagonistic relationship that ended up where the frontline folks were just like, customers on the phone.
You know, it's like more than an actual task.
Exactly. So we added that core value. And then once you add that core value and you define it, what does it mean? How does it look if I'm living this value? And how does it not look, right? Yeah. And then also just incorporating that value into their policies, their processes, the decisions they were making when it came to customers and each other, you know, set them on their way. And a couple months later, reached out to my client and said, you know, hey, how is that going? And she said, yeah, it's easy. It's just easy. We haven't had any issues. People know what's expected of them. They know how they need to interact. They know how we interact with customers, how we interact with each other when it comes to the customer, when it comes to just, you know, respecting each other. So it was a game changer, right? And I've seen that time and time again. We haven't always gone in and changed core values, but it's also about understanding what those core values mean, because too many times the core values are just posters on a wall, or they're
fluff words that don't actually get put into action.
Exactly. So if you start helping people understand why we have those and how we're going to use them and how we're going to incorporate them into the day-to-day, I mean, it just takes time, but ultimately you end up reshaping the culture to the one that you actually meant to have when you created those core values. So
yeah, I also really like that, because what I thought to myself was, if the employee or the manager or the leader, whoever it is in the company, doesn't have to ask, how do I accomplish this? And they just, like you just said, they made it really easy. They know exactly what to do. They know what's expected of them. If there's no unknown, it's accomplished, it seems like, because it's very straightforward. And I really like that piece of advice, because one thing that I really try to accomplish with this podcast is giving listeners actionable ways to go about things. So how can they come away from this episode and think, okay, what is something I could work on for my business relating to culture transformation right now, which I really like. And shifting this a little bit. So we talked about the culture side of things. We talked about how that implements into processes, decision-making, all that fun stuff.
Yes.
Now flipping it on its head a little bit and going towards the data and the analytics. I know that you mentioned earlier that you do a lot of speaking engagements. And I know just recently you were talking at All Access about the role of predictive analytics in delivering a great customer experience.
Yep.
So I would really like to know, how would you define predictive analytics in this specific context? Because I feel like that's a wide open road. So how would you go about defining it in this context?
Yeah, absolutely. And even before I say that, because it's going to be part of my definition too, is that data really is at the heart of designing and delivering a great experience. And so you've got to know where that data is, and then you've actually got to do something with it and predict it. I mean, that seems like a no-brainer, right? But that's just, but predictive. So we've come a long way in terms of our evolution of analytics, right? We've had descriptive analytics, we've had diagnostic analytics, you know, what's happening and why is it happening? And then we've now got predictive and prescriptive. And I think that the last company that I worked for before starting my own business was a predictive prescriptive analytics startup here in Orange County. And I learned so much from that, right? Predictive analytics is such an important tool for us to use today. It was an important tool to use 7 years ago, but especially today, because it's really what we do is we're taking historical and real-time data and algorithms and machine learning and using that to identify the likelihood of future outcomes. I mean, that's probably the simplest definition of predictive that I have.
Okay. And leading off of that definition, how do you go about advising the use of predictive analytics in customer experience?
Oh, gosh. I mean, there are so many ways. There are just so many ways. I mean, when I did that presentation, I had a slide that had probably 20 plus different ways that you can use predictive analytics to improve the customer experience, right? And the list wasn't exhaustive. So, I mean, really, I think the bottom line is that it's important to use it to, you know, meet your customers' expectations, help them achieve the outcomes that they're trying to achieve, and then at the same time, help the business achieve the outcomes that the business is trying to achieve. So if you think about things like for customers, we're talking about recommendations and optimized messaging and helping them have the experience that they want and need to have at the time that they're, you know, so that journey orchestration piece, you know, using AI and predictive and prescriptive to help them through the journey. And for the business, it's, you know, it's dynamic pricing, it's predicting system failures, it's predicting churn, it's optimizing those messages. It's, there are so many different ways that you can use predictive that I think people are falling short if they don't. And the crazy part was, is, you know, when I worked for that startup years ago, we were trying to sell the whole concept behind predictive and prescriptive. And it was like, it's such a no-brainer and it makes so much sense. But I think it was just so new and people were just like, no, that's going to take my job away. And it's like, no. This will make your job much easier and much happier because this will take you from spending 3 weeks or a month or more than a month doing the analysis that you're doing to, we can run this stuff in minutes. I mean, seconds, you know. So if people aren't embracing it yet, they need to, because it's really a game changer for meeting those customer expectations.
Yeah, absolutely. Could not agree. Actually, I can't even imagine not using something like that these days. I think probably 80% of my time relating to customers is studying those predictive analytics and trying to understand where the insights you pull from that instead of taking the time to gather that, because there are things out there to help you with that.
Yeah.
Do you have any specific recommendations for programs or softwares that you would use or recommend to clients for predictive analytics?
I don't, because I don't typically go out and recommend any software or anything, but I will say that there's a lot of tools that you do need for using AI and predictive, because there are tools that are around, where's the data? How's the data getting cleaned? You know, those kinds of things. There's the actual analytic tool and the algorithm that you're going to be using. And then there's the CRM system or the contact center, like where that all has to be fed into so that it can be used. So there's a lot of different tools ultimately, but I think the best recommendation that I can give is if you can find an all-in-one platform,
now we're off to the races,
right? Where data is all brought together, it's all done in one place. And then those insights are fed out to the people who need to use them and to deliver the experience. I think that's going to be your winning combination there.
Yeah, that is a great point. Yep. And I think the companies are continuously trying to be in the race to build things like that. And it's going to happen soon enough. And it'll be for every different kind of industry and all that fun stuff. But in the meantime, as long as you hit those buckets, you'll be good to go.
Exactly.
That's great. And I guess bringing this whole conversation together, because this is around your expertise and your consulting services and how you go about things. I'm curious to know, when you meet with a new business, what are the two most valuable bits of information that you always ask at the start that you use in your strategy for them?
There's two, but I might add a third one to go with this. The first one I ask is, what problem are you trying to solve? What's the catalyst? Why did you reach out to me? Or why do you want to do this work, right? And 9 times out of 10, I get, we're losing business, you know, that kind of thing. I've had a couple of clients who've come to me and said, you know what, we are top in the market, but competitors are nipping at our heels, or there's really no difference between us and the competitor. So we want to get that competitive advantage, you know, those kinds of things. So that's the number one question. What problem are you trying to solve? The second thing that I like to ask is, where's your executive team on all this, right? So if we start to implement this customer experience strategy, are they behind us? Are they going to be fighting us? Or do you have the budget? Are you going to get the support that you need across the organization, not just the CEO, especially the CEO, but not just the CEO, but all of the department heads or business unit heads? Are they all aligned on this? Do they all get it? Do they all understand that the customer experience needs to be the primary focus and that employee experience drives customer experience? And I will tell you, I've sat in many leadership team meetings where I'll say something about the employee experience drives the customer experience, and they'll get this nudge, nudge. That's me nudging my elbow here. Nudge, nudge. Oh, I'm so glad you said that. I didn't know that. And I'm like, what? How do you not know that? So those are big questions. The third one that I'll just throw in there, because I think this is a really important one too, because we've just talked about this, because culture is the foundation. I like to know, where do you think the culture stands today? What type of culture do you have today? And so I think those are three important questions to really help set the tone for where this strategy is going to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm curious to know, just out of my own curiosity, when you ask the question around culture, do you find that if you're getting different answers or people aren't easily sure how to answer that right away, then there's a gap that's happening there?
Yes, because they really aren't in tune with the fact that the culture is the foundation. And it means that there really isn't truly a define culture. It's just, like I said, you get the culture you design or the one you allow, right? So they're getting the one that they're allowing. So that's really important to know, definitely. And you know, the funny thing is, so I ask those questions of the executive is the leaders that I meet with, initial calls, initial conversations. But then I go and I'll interview, when we start the engagement, interview the leadership team, some employees and some customers. And questions that I'll ask of both the leaders and the employees are around core values. Do people know, do they understand the core values? And then these are just questions that I ask around culture. I'll also ask questions around employee experience and customer experience. But for the culture, I'll ask, how would you describe the culture? Do people know and live the core values? So that comes out. That always elicits some really fun responses. And then my favorite two questions are, what's the glue that holds the company together? What is the unglue? What's breaking the company apart? And there is just so much information in just those, even just those two questions, never mind all four questions, but so much information in those two questions that a lot of times at the root of where we go with our strategy is right there. And it helps me, it guides me in terms of the culture and some of the things that need to be fixed before we can even really spend a lot of time on employee experience and customer experience. Because what a lot of times what ends up happening is it comes out that there's definitely culture issues and there's definitely issues on the leadership team that we need to get resolved before we can even move forward with anything else. So.
I really love that question. That's so interesting to me because even just from a small company to a big company, that question is so unique that it tells you a lot. Because even I think, let's say for a startup, two co-founders, how would they describe what's the glue that's keeping this company together? And when you have variation in that, that's probably where these gaps start to form. You can see the different view on it. Yeah. And more importantly, you just see each person's perspective on it. Because I'm sure also the leadership team versus the manager level versus the other employee levels might be entirely different. But that's not actually what you want, even though they're in different capacities that they're working at. So I really like that. It's given me a lot to think about. And I'm sure
good.
The listeners, because it's almost like you provided them a checklist of assessing and auditing their own process, right?
Absolutely.
And doing their own strategy and realizing, like, okay, what is the glue that keeps this company together alongside the valuable bits of information?
Absolutely. And I would just say that, and it's not a plug for hiring me or any consultant by any stretch, but I will say that you will 99% of the time will get better answers if they're asked by someone outside of the organization, just because fear of recourse, fear of whatever, if somebody internally asks, and just not wanting to be honest with
step on toe
that you work with or talk to every day, you know? So, and you know, when I do those interviews, I know who the person is and department and everything, but I don't share back with leaders when I do the report who said what, you know, it's just, that wouldn't be fair at all. So I promise them anonymity and
And it's a neutral party, right? It's not like there's any emotion involved in it. It's very much around you offering strategy and strategy alone, not with an extra added bit, which sometimes happens. It's obviously, it's people management at the end of the day. So that tends to creep in. But thank you so much for providing that insight and giving a really nice, clear, and actionable way for people to think about their own strategy. And before I let you go, something that we always do on our show is a lightning round of questions. Lightning round question number one is, what is the biggest challenge facing companies in marketing right now?
There's a lot right now. And I think probably with AI, that in and of itself opens up a whole big bucket of challenges for them, right? I think from the talent perspective, acquisition and retention is huge for every industry. I think that's a big thing. Marketers are not free from dealing with issues on that. And I think the other thing is, so three big things, right? Around understanding customers and keeping up with their changing needs and behaviors and everything is certainly a challenge for marketers and has been for the last several years. Yeah.
Agreed. Also, because I feel like when you get a deeper insight, that also adds challenges. There's so much information you have to keep up even faster and you keep ahead of everybody else that can cause some problems. But that was a really great way to answer a huge question in a lightning round. So kudos to you on that one. This one is easier with a simpler answer, I promise.
All right.
What is the best book about marketing or life in general that you would recommend?
I'm going to go life in general because this book has stuck with me and I've shared it with my kids. I've shared it with others too. And I think a lot of people have probably read this book, but it's a great book. It's the book called Make Your Bed. You know, start your day by making your bed and you can change the world, right? And then it gives you 10 other things that you can do just to really kick off some change in your world or in the world in general. And I think for me, it's like, if you get up and you make your bed, you can check something off your checklist and say, I've already done something today, you know? So it's just sort of that feeling of I'm accomplished already.
I can do this.
Good start to the day, right? Yeah.
Very good. Last but not least is there a piece of marketing or life advice that someone shared with you once that has always stayed with you?
32 years in this field, I can tell you there's a lot. I think the one thing, and this comes from my dad, so it might be both applicable both in business and in life, right?
Double whammy. I love it.
Everything happens the way it's supposed to. Then that comes from my dad. You know, I know there are a lot of variations on that, but I remember the day my dad told me that. And I was like, that's a good one. That's a good bit of advice. I will always just let that sit and ruminate and go with that. Yeah, absolutely.
I love that. And I will keep it at that because that was perfect. But actually, just fun fact, we ask that for everybody on every single episode because it's actually just wild the stories that you get. Some go in the marketing direction, some go in the life direction. You hear some really interesting stories. And sometimes people have asked me after the show, what is something that I always go by? And actually mine is everything happens for a reason. So I very much resonate with that because it's kind of the way that you just said. So
absolutely. I like it. We're right there.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Annette, for joining us today. It was lovely to have you on the show.
Absolutely.
Retain, the Customer Retention Podcast, is brought to you by Gameball. If you want to turn casual buyers into loyal lifetime customers, make sure to check out the episode description to book a demo with Gameball today. Also, make sure to subscribe to Retain the Customer Retention Podcast in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and you never miss an episode. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.